John Joe, and welcome to the Indigenous Futures Podcast, a podcast in service to amplifying Indigenous voices as they vision a collective future built on Indigenous ways of knowing. I'm your host, Teo Montoya. I'm in Day, also known as Lipan Apache from South and West Texas. I'm a writer, an electronic music maker, a self-proclaimed Indigenous futurist, a student of traditional ecological knowledge, and a proud member of the Lipan Apache Band of Texas. So in the first episode of the Indigenous Futures podcast, we talked a lot about the power that Indigenous futurism holds as a movement, as a theory to allow us to vision a future and to reclaim our voices as modern Indigenous peoples and to be critical of Western thought and the trappings of Western consciousness that might not allow us to vision a future where we are in right relationship with each other, with the earth and with our plant and animal relatives. We also talked a little bit about Grace L. Dillon's work and specifically her anthology of Indigenous science fiction called Walking the Clouds. And in this episode, we are really going to dive into that book and specifically the intro where Dillon creates these kind of pillars of Indigenous futurism that she then organizes all of the anthology stories into. But before we dive into that, I think it is important to just touch on what is so powerful in science fiction that is kind of a universal capacity of science fiction and how that is really the foundation that Indigenous futurism utilizes. So again, in the first episode, we did talk about some of those lovely colonial trappings of science fiction and how it was so interested in the colonial endeavor and the exoticism of all of that. And so when we get into that, there's plenty to unpack there, and I think we will, but there's something central to that's, you know, it's fundamental to science fiction that is really profound. And that is its capacity to ask questions, right? To really ask questions. Every speculative works, whether that's fantasy, science fiction, any other form of art that, you know, speculates, it has a question. It's like, what would happen 3,000 years from now if we didn't live on planet Earth? What would happen if a person walked on the moon? What would it be like? Right. And so all of those questions begin the imagination. And what I think is really powerful here is that that seed of imagination kind of blurs the line between prophecy and storytelling. And it is here that I really think about us as Indigenous peoples and our lineage of oral story keeping and how so many of our creation stories are not only about where we come from and how the world was built, but you know, where we are now and the very landscapes and relationships we have now, as well as things that are supposedly coming in the future. And every time we hear one of those stories, it's a moment in which we can choose if we are going to engage with that and bring that to life. So there's this seed of imagination that actually lends itself to prophecy building. And again, this is something that I think is in all science fiction. When we look at 1984, when we look at even books like Dune, which are on completely different planets, completely different societies, all these different things, all of them take influence from the real world and through the experiences of the person telling that story, cast a prediction, cast a possibility of what could or should or might happen. And, you know, this might not be realistic, right? This could be complete fantasy, but it holds truth because it's around the experience of being human, around being conscious. So as we engage with our stories as Indigenous peoples, and as we write our own narratives, our own new narratives, we are really bringing the essence of who we are as an individual, but also as, you know, our culture and where we come from and our family and all these things. And all of that is poured out of the story because the story is really just a reflection of the individual. And there's something specific about the Indigenous experience being post-colonial, essentially, that has these themes that develop. And really, Grace L. Dillon is in this book breaking down these five themes, and all of them have to do with the experience of being Indigenous in the modern world. We're going to start with the first theme, which is actually called Native Slipstream. Now, slipstream is kind of this term that has turned into a little bit of a catch-all for anything that pushes against a genre or pushes against a construct or a category. And so slipstream is this thing that kind of feels avant-garde, right? So it's this, you know, I don't know if anybody's ever seen that movie Cloud Atlas, which is operating like six different storylines across several thousand different years, different timelines, and there's something that's linking them all together. And I think this would be an excellent example of Slipstream, where it confounds normal conventions of storytelling. And we see these conventions all the time in our creation stories, in our in mythology, in folklore. There's always these things that are like, okay, this doesn't make sense to the rational Western mind that is wants everything to be linear and wants everything to be kind of categorized and going, oh, this is pop music and this is, you know, jazz music, or this is fantasy and this is nonfiction. And so anything that blurs those lines, we can call slipstream. And I think a really wonderful way to think about slipstream and a really powerful theme that comes up a lot in Indigenous storytelling is timeline shifting and kind of universe shifting and going between universes and all these different planes of existence operating at the same time. And when we look at what's behind those stories, we can see they're stories that happen in the past. They also are happening right now to us as listeners and storytellers, and they're happening in some future. And sometimes those lines between past, present, and future don't exist at all, right? They're totally not there. And I just am kind of enamored with this concept because the linear trajectory of storytelling is such a strong component of Western thought. And of course, it has its uses, right? We need things to be linear, but it also misses this opportunity to apply itself to more than the present moment, to apply itself more to more than just the past or more than just the future, right? We're talking about everything all at the same time. And Indigenous concepts of time are vastly different. And there's just so many ways that us as human beings and as Indigenous people conceptualize the world and our experience of it and the timelines of it. And as we work as Indigenous artists, we really want to be thinking about these ways that we conceptualize the world and not like trying to force them to happen, but just realize that they happen through us. And every time that we tell stories that go against the grain, so to speak, then we are putting our life into it in a way that can be kind of almost shocking to some people, right? Where they're like, wait, what's happening with all these different timelines and these different ways of conceptualizing dream world and conceptualizing how we think about the world. But that is the power of it, right? Is fundamentally changing the very ways in which we look at reality. And as we're doing this, as we're fundamentally changing the ways in which people look at reality, we're recategorizing, we're expanding categories, we're expanding genre, we're expanding experiences, we're moving outside of these neat little boxes that appeal to some stereotype. And of course, people like stereotypes because it's familiar, but people also like breaking expectation just as much. There's absolutely a thrill in experiencing something we've never experienced before. And if you're a literary person, you definitely see this happening in things like urban fantasy, where we're recategorizing kind of a realist novel, like what we would call a normal novel, but we're adding these fantastical elements into them. And as these novels get really popular, we're expanding kind of what the public and what the readers at large experience as normal. But for some people, anytime they're confronted with a story that doesn't appeal to any stereotype or doesn't appeal to some sort of set pattern they're already expecting, there can be some pushback, or there can be some discomfort in what that feels like. But that is the exact purpose of it, is to push against the confines of how we construct our realities in our minds and in our bodies. So that can just be a theme as an Indigenous artist that you use to go, all right, I'm going to tell a story on three timelines. I'm going to tell a story across multiple universes, and I'm not going to explain every single detail about it. It's going to defy categorization. And that defying, as Indigenous peoples, that's just a continuation of our own stories, right? Because a lot of our creation stories, you're not going to hand them over to a scientist and be like, prove this, right? And that's not what it's about. We don't need them proven to know their truth. And I think that that's something that people have to contend with. And as more and more people come in contact with these different narratives and these different concepts that push against what they expect and the stereotypes they expect, they can, you know, make contact with them. They can get kind of familiar with them, and they can really start to see that truth that we already see in those stories, right? And that's what's so powerful about art and storytelling and all these things, because they still touch something in us that is universally human. And when we can tap into that and grow from there, that's where we can really start to see the specific wisdom of the indigenous mind in it, in how these stories are being taught and what they're speaking to and how they might provide us with the imagination necessary to vision things into the future in a way that's good, in a way that's in right relationship with the earth, our relatives, and ourselves. And I'll say that you can kind of think of this redefining as decolonizing, as taking the, you know, clutches of Western imagination out of our artistry, out of our storytelling, out of the very ways in which we view the world. And we can do that through art and story. As we know, we can use it as these touchstones for redefining the very ways we experience the world, our very realities. So slipstream again is really bit wide, as you've seen, but the importance is that it slips the mind, right? It really changes how we're viewing things. It really changes the playing ground, so to speak. And that's why it's such a fundamental of what it means to employ Indigenous futurism as kind of a framework to work in, is to completely redefine these normal concepts. And even as Indigenous peoples, we're always going to be doing that. Just the mere act of being Indigenous and creating will do these things. But if we want to decolonize our practice and our praxis and the very knowledge that we learn maybe through U.S. institutions that might have, you know, kind of gripped us a little tighter with some of the Western concepts of what it means to be an artist and how to vision the world and how to view the world, then this is an important place to start. So the next theme is quite a bit different, because it's not about completely redefining anything. It's called contact. And everywhere you look in science fiction, contact is a theme. And a ton of really well-known like blockbusters are about this experience of contact, whether that's in an adventure or science fiction. It's about how one group of people connects with another group of people, or with aliens, or with some mystical creature, or with, you know, it's always this contact between the kind of normal life, the person who's telling the story, and this thing that's outside of them, you know. And so when we look at E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind and these kinds of movies, it's all about contact and how we conceptualize the other, with a capital O, the other, and the alien, you know, the things that's completely separate from who we are. And, you know, you can look at this in the very ways we talk about immigration in the U.S. and we talk about illegal aliens, right? These people, these things, these experiences that are not like us. And often it's the fallout of these people not being like us, us not being able to communicate, us not being able to work things out, or it's the kind of universal themes that we connect around and how we actually come to be one, how do we come together and how we can befriend one another. So it doesn't always have to be this negative concept, but it's such an important theme, because it's really looking at the very ways in which we view the unknown. And right away, if you're an Indigenous artist, in some ways, your work is going to touch on this. And whether that's very directly or whether that's just through the reality of being Indigenous, contact is important, because we are always creating divides between what is our traditional native experience, you know, what we know from our tribe, from our elders, from those places that we learn, and what the other world is, right? And so many Indigenous people have this experience of walking in two worlds. And this experience of contact, this theme of contact, is not only talking about the very real physical act that happens when two completely different worldviews come together, but also how those worldviews are embedded in our identities and in our bodies and just in our minds, right? As Indigenous peoples, as modern Indigenous peoples, and as modern urban Indigenous peoples, you know, walking those two roads. So there are a couple central themes within Contact, and one of the first things that we're really talking about is that divide, or lack thereof, between discovery and invasion, and how so often, depending on which side you are on, you are either being invaded or you are discovering. And just understanding that, like, it's really as simple as that, to just understand that when you're engaged with a character or with a concept, or you have this vision in your head of what you're writing or what you're coming up with, and it's driven by discovery to new places, maybe rethinking how those places are not new to the inhabitants that are there, and you might actually be invading. And then also with everything in underneath Contact, turning that inward, right? How we might be trying to discover our ways, or discover or reconnect with some of our traditions, especially if we've been removed through them, if we're diasporic peoples, or don't have as much contact with our traditional ways as some other Native folks do. We might go in seeking contact. We might want to discover these parts of ourselves, but which ways can we do that without invading them, without bringing in the very colonial mindset that separated us from those ways to begin with? We can also start grappling with extraction, and how, you know, that very act of contact can lead to extraction. And really, this is probing these questions about how to be in right relationship with whatever you're coming in contact with. So as Indigenous artists working within the framework of Indigenous Futurism, you really have to be thinking about contact and how you can engage with it in a way that allows you to not only decolonize yourself, but decolonize all that you come in contact with. And this really allows us to reconfigure our experiences with contact so that we're not just, you know, dominated by it or simply resilient in the face of it, but we actually can take an action towards decolonizing our experience of it and reversing potentially the damage of it. And doing that is really what allows us again to step in and actually start visioning our future, right? Where we're not simply surviving. We've moved beyond that. We are actually in an active movement of creating a world that is going to benefit our peoples and all life on this planet. Thank you so much for tuning into the second episode of the Indigenous Futures podcast. I really hope that going through these first two pillars of Indigenous Futurism has been supportive for you. Next week, I'll be following up with the three remaining pillars: Indigenous Science, Sustainability and Technology, Native Apocalypse, and what Grace L. Dillon calls Returning to Ourselves. If you enjoy this podcast, feel free to hit the subscribe, the follow button, leave a rating, leave me a comment. If there's anything you think that I could be doing better, I would really like to hear that in the comments as well. If you want to follow me on social media, I'm currently on Instagram, so you can hit me up there at Indigenous Futures Podcast. And I'll talk to you all on the next podcast. Ashwagandhe.